Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. The nation is preparing for the 50th commemoration of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. This is an opportunity for a nation to re-examine the slain president. He was a man who became an icon. But now, only half a century, can we take an objective look at JFK as a president and JFK as a man. Who was he? A playboy, a war hero, intellectual author, cold warrior, a martyr? A PBS American Experience report has given us a personal story of JFK. Last night was the first half of their four-hour special. Tonight is the second half of the program. You can watch it on San Antonio's KLRN-TV, a public television station. And we're joined by the director of the program, Susan Bellows. Welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me, David.
So, Susan, looking at John F. Kennedy, of course, is the perfect opportunity for us to re-examine the life of John F. Kennedy, but so much has been written about him. What new do you have to tell us?
Well, it's probably important to understand, you know, we didn't go into this saying, you know, we've broken new news and, you know, we're not an investigative series, but we were very conscious of the fact that in the last couple of years, there has been a host of new archives open and material that has provided some new insights into Kennedy's performance in the White House and into his personal life and his early life. And so it was drawing upon a variety of new sources of information that and scholarly assessments that we tried to take advantage of in this film to try and create a kind of more comprehensive distilled portrait of him and his presidency.
And the program is beautifully executed. There's so much archival footage of John F. Kennedy because, of course, his family was so well known. He was practically born a celebrity, and his rise to prominence, it's all there. So it's just a lot of great footage.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. We have heard that today from a lot of people, and there's such a tremendous wealth of material to choose from. It's kind of a filmmaker's dream because there's, you know, beautiful home movies. Kennedy and his wife, once he was an established politician, were very skillful at their use of media. They built relationships with very talented commercial photographers who've left behind a huge repository. There's a lot of personal family photographs. So we certainly had a lot of very rich material to work with, and that included some of the more recently released audio tapes from the Oval Office and the Cuban Missile Crisis period, as well as some personal audio tapes that he had made before he was elected president. So we were tapping into a variety of visual and archival audio material as well.
The Kennedy family, famously protective of their legacy, and sometimes it's very difficult to get candid remarks about what life was like in the conclave. Has that finally been pierced, and are we really getting a look at what it was like to be a Kennedy?
Well, it wasn't the overall goal of the film per se. We certainly, you know, by having the benefit of relying on some of the scholarship of someone like Robert Dallek, who several years ago was allowed to have access to the medical files of Kennedy that were housed at the Kennedy Library. When those medical files were opened, that offered some new insights into him. There have been countless letters that have been released over the years that offer new insights. We had the privilege of interviewing David Nassau, who had just written a biography about Joseph Kennedy, Jack Kennedy's father. And he was certainly granted open access to all the family files and correspondence. And so I think we were really tapping into some new information and insights about relationships within the family. And we also had the privilege of doing an interview with President Kennedy's sister, Jean Kennedy Smith, who's able to offer some wonderful firsthand anecdotes and observations and memories from some very pivotal moments in Kennedy's life.
She can explain what it was like around the dinner table with Joseph Kennedy holding court.
Yes, exactly. And it's a story that I think kind of reveals something about the dynamic of his relationship with his father and sometimes within the family.
Right. And the father, Joseph Kennedy, of course, one of the wealthiest men in America at the time, ambassador to England. It was interesting how their relationship was, it seemed, not always, they almost equals at times.
Yes, I think there's sort of a bit of a myth. I think that Joe was the powerful father and a bit of the puppeteer, and when his first son died, he forced Jack to follow his ambitions to have a son enter into the White House. He had grand ambitions for his children, but in many ways, Jack was also his own man. They had a very strong relationship. He certainly relied on his father in many ways, but they also weren't afraid to disagree on issues. His father opened a lot of doors for him, but part of Jack's evolution, I think, was learning how to take advantage of those opportunities and evolve as a very skillful politician in his own right, very separate from his father, even though he continued to rely on his father's encouragement and support.
And they particularly differed on the U.S. role pre-World War II. Joseph Kennedy still an isolationist, and John Kennedy saying we need to get involved in writing the book Why England Slept, which was his first entree into the national stage.
Yeah, I think he makes an analysis of England's role that doesn't completely contradict, his father's support of England, but he comes at it from a different perspective and argues essentially that England had no choice but to follow the route to appeasement because they had not built up sufficient military strength to stand down the Nazis. And so there's some interesting insights you see in a young man who's, essentially working out, thinking about large geopolitical issues when he's really just, he's still a senior in college. And that was sort of an interesting insight to me, how sort of dear to his heart and how engaged he was with some of these issues of global politics.
The documentary, you take on so much. I really feel like we're getting a personal inside look at what was like on the Kennedy compound and in Camelot. We're going to take a look at that. I really want to talk about the health of John F. Kennedy. Many Americans still don't know about his troubled health and his life in pain. We're going to have to dig into that when we come back from this break. We're also going to get to phone calls. Our phone line is 614-8980. 614-8980. We're speaking with the director of the program, JFK, appearing on PBS, American Experiences, Susan Bellows. More on that when we come back. This is The Source on KSTX.
In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion, which we bring to this endeavor, will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
This is The Source on KSTX, and that is a famous speech from President John F. Kennedy. We're speaking with the director of the program, JFK, on PBS, The American Experience. You can watch the second half tonight on KLRN-TV. Susan Bellows is joining us. So ask not what you, what the country can do for you. How did he come up with that?
You know, I think one of the things that's interesting about that speech is how much the speech was about foreign policy at that time, and what the ask not is certainly a call to national commitment and sacrifice, but it's also within the context of a speech that's focused almost exclusively on foreign challenges. And in a way, a speech that's kind of designed to kind of inspire a country that's feeling a little bit anxious about the Soviet threat. I think it's a fascinating example. It's rousing and inspiring and certainly speaks to one of his greatest legacies, and that he became, an important source of inspiration for a generation. But it also kind of is a lens on the context of the times and the fact that he was taking office at a moment where, you know, it was sort of the first president to take office at a moment when, you know, our greatest enemy had the ability to annihilate us. And that nuclear threat was something that was very much on his mind and would be kind of a defining issue over the course of his presidency.
And the Cuban Missile Crisis, which you definitely take on in your program and explain and walk us through that. The number to call is 614-8980, 614-8980. Let's get to the phones, and Kathy is on the line. Kathy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hi, Kathy.
I'd like to hear your opinion on the role of the Kennedys as sort of a political aristocracy, where they just stayed up there in that role.
Okay, thank you.
I think that's a question a lot of people probably have in their mind and certainly speak about a lot. I don't feel I'm really qualified to answer that one because our film was so limited to the life and presidency of John Kennedy. I spent all of my energies really trying to get a deeper understanding of him, his impact on the office, his effect on American culture and American politics. So I don't feel personally like I know enough to comment on the influence of his family after his death.
How did John F. Kennedy change the presidency?
I think he certainly, elevated the role of charisma and personality and its importance in the office. I think he ushered in a different relationship between the media and the president. The power of personality, one thing we'll explore in tonight's film is you'll see that the way he sets up the Oval Office was sort of distinctive, that he was a center of the wheel and people had to go through him to and couldn't bypass him. So he was sort of the decision maker, and I think that had a transformative effect on the office. This is the way the Oval Office was run.
So can we now finally kind of separate John F. Kennedy's 1,000 days as president from the assassination and take an objective look at how really was he as a president?
Well, it's certainly what we tried to do in the film. We early on went in and we very early on made the decision that we would not deal with the assassination.
There's going to be a lot of that. A lot of that's coming up.
Exactly. And it feels like it just clouds the assessment of his presidency. It becomes nothing but a story of conspiracies. So we were pretty conscious about not wanting to really explore the assassination in any way. So I think that does free us up to, there was a real density of event during the course of his 1,000 days. It was a pivotal moment for America. The civil rights movement was taking off. He was building up our presence in Vietnam. America was at the height of the Cold War. You know, during the course of his 1,000 days, he was bouncing back and forth between all of these very, very critical things. And so that seemed to be more than enough to try and cover and analyze and get an understanding of how he reacted to those events and what kind of a legacy he left.
The State Department has just tweeted a photo of Caroline Kennedy signing her appointment papers to become ambassador to Japan. So the legacy does continue.
Mm.
And that's an interesting note that's happening right now. Let's go back to the phones. The number is 614-8980, and Roland wants to join us. Roland, welcome to The Source.
I was very much impressed by the inauguration speech that Kennedy gave and asking for, ask not what your country can do for you. Consequently, because of that, a couple of years later, I did join the Peace Corps. And I was ready to go to New York to take off for my country of service, which is Colombia, South America.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw Kennedy November the 21st here in San Antonio, along one of the streets in downtown, I was very much taken by that I could actually see him. And and the following day, I was to fly out of San Antonio. I had to delay my flight because of the assassination. And it was a very much turmoil during that time. And I did fly out the following day. And it was to New York. And we were gathered in New York, ready to fly out from New York to Colombia. And
was there a lot of people just hugging each other? How did y'all deal with that?
Well, there was three of us that had come from Texas, and we were going to join the rest of the group, which was about 50. In New York, and they were all ready to greet us when we got there because they were mostly from the East Coast area, so they were waiting for us at the airport, and it was very emotional. Get off the plane there in New York and be greeted by several of our friends that were waiting for us, and the first thing that they told us: you're coming from Texas, and we're sorry that this happened in Texas, but you had nothing to do with that.
All right, Roland. Roland, thank you so much for that story. That's an incredible story. I got another caller who wants to talk about John F. Kennedy and their influence. Go ahead, Lucy. Lucy, welcome to the show. You're on the air.
Okay, hi. This is Lou, and I was at Jefferson High School when we heard that President Kennedy had been assassinated. We were in our English class, as many people will tell you they know exactly where they were. But I just wanted to comment on, despite their being so wealthy, this family did give a lot to the community and just did a lot of volunteer work. Well, I don't see very many presidents do a lot of things like that, like he did. And he really inspired many of us baby boomers, and we'll never forget him. And I know that a lot of things we do for our country is because of him.
All right,
thank
Lucy,
you for the time you gave me.
Lucy, thank you for that call. So Lucy and Roland, obviously baby boomers, but the new generation, the millennials, they're being introduced to Kennedy with this event now. Do you think?
I do, actually. I'm first of all, it's a real treat to hear the memories of your callers, and particularly for those who were from Texas. And, you know, as one of the callers pointed out, everybody has a moment and knows where they were at that moment when Kennedy's assassinated. And while I said that, you know, we don't deal with the assassination, We do mark the moment of his death, and in the film, I hope people will tune in tonight to have an opportunity to see it. And one of the striking things about it was that we found so much good archival footage that helped to document the profound effect that his assassination had, really, on people around the globe.
Yes.
And so we kind of wanted to mark that moment, and I hope that for some of the callers that called in and have such a personal story that they're able to experience that.
You can tune in tonight on KLRN-TV in San Antonio to PBS and view the second half of the four-hour special, American Experience. JFK, the director of the program, Susan Bellows, thank you so much for speaking with us on The Source.
Thank you for having me.
And this is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.